Still got some kind of doubts about the Jehovah falls down from the spiritual world or never. Can you just a short explanation, because I've got some discussion recently and I again entangled in what Prabhupada said and what Narayan Maharaj said, like at different points. Very short. Just to clarify, last time I want to ask you about this.
No, it's not, you know, the people change, but the questions stay the same. I mean, I appreciate you. You say, I will never ask this again. Obviously, you're an intelligent person. You'll hear it and remember it. But you're saying that I will never ask this again. That's fine. I hope that my answer can somehow settle your mind. But it may not, and you may pursue the question more elsewhere. That's your prerogative. But as far as me not facing this question again, I'm sure I've faced it a few times already in the last 40 years since I have been well aware of a more broader viewpoint of the situation since 35 years.
Because you're Shastri, you know all the scriptures better than anybody, that's why.
Well, I wouldn't accept that first, what you just said, but as far as... One of the biggest difficulties in understanding the modern books, contemporary books, is that sometimes the writers of those books, they say two different things. The same author will say, you receive bhakti from Krishna, or you can receive bhakti, the seed of bhakti, from Guru. Okay? Because that's what it says in the Shastra, and that's the translation. Then that same translator, the same author, in the same book, a short few verses later, says that prema, pure love for Krishna, is inside the heart of every jiva. And then, although it's not in the Bengali at all, another line is added there. It said, it's not to be gotten from an outside source. It's right in the verse. I mean, not in the verse, but it's in the translation by this author. And that same author, 10 verses before that, said that bhakti is received from an outside source. Krishna or Guru. Usually Guru or devotee. And last life or this life. So now, the writings of such an author will be a little confusing. So now someone has to have fine discretion, a non-offensive discretion, fine discretion based on intelligence, which gives that discrimination power, intelligence. And admittedly, most people don't have too much. And intelligence and study of Shastra to know what it is there. There's two views being presented almost on all issues. There's two views everywhere. And this, and that some books by some acharyas, they often have two views. It's not consistent. Sometimes the statements and commentaries and translations are exactly according to the conceptions and understandings of our great Mahajans. They're in concordance, they're in agreement with Six Goswami's teachings and the Bhagavatam, Gita, Vishwanath Narottam Baladev. And sometimes they're just the opposite. So now what to do? Because the author may be someone's guru or someone's param guru or in their line, so that they have a certain sense of chastity to that guru or that parampara, and a certain sense of loyalty and chastity and faith. And because we're devotees by nature, most devotional type people that surrender to God, I mean to guru, and seriously practice spiritual life, they're somewhat by nature submissive, to some extent, submissive and humble, curious, intelligent, wanting something more than this birth and death world has to offer. So they turn to God, they turn to Guru. But Prabhupada himself, he's often said, we should study the books of the previous acharyas. He said, we must. He said, even some places he writes a letter, we must study the books of the previous acharyas, otherwise you'll fall down. So when one does that, he'll see that on many issues, even among great acharyas like Jiva Goswami or Vishwanath, there are differences of opinion about fine points of rasa. Is Radha and Krishna's relationship parakiya or swakiya? And in one place, Jiva Goswami is saying swakiya, that they're married, and everyone else is saying parakiya. And Vishwanath says, he flatly goes against it. He says, Jiva Goswami, I don't know why he's saying this. I think he's just said this for someone else's benefit. He was writing this article to please some friend of his. I can't accept this. And he says, I can't accept it. And he promoted and explained Parakiya Bhav, which is the actual situation. So even on the highest level of Mahajans, Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas and Mahajans, there may be Sandesh Bade, differences of opinion on the philosophy. Basically, it boils down to what settles and what appeals to your intellect at the particular time that you're looking at yourself and your spiritual life. And if sometimes you're in one stage in your spiritual life, you'll be reading so many things, you don't know very much, so it's all new. And you're simply reading and swallowing everything, accepting everything, and assuming that everything is perfect and everything is correct and everything is right, because the guru is supposed to give the perfect, right, and correct knowledge to the student, disciple. So you carry on like that. But as you grow and mature and expand your reading, which is part of the instruction of the guru to read all of our Goswami books, and then you don't know in the beginning, but pretty soon you come to know, oh, we are supposed to follow the teachings and example and writings of Rupa and Raghunath. It doesn't say Sanatana Goswami, although many people, their Bible is Brihad Bhagavatamritam. But the Brihad Bhagavatamritam, the hero of that book is a Gopa and Sakiras. But there's not everywhere else, every other book, every other acharya is all about Madhurya Ras. And all the acharyas and writers of those books are all mandris in Madhurya Ras, Mandri Bhav, including Sanatana. So then that, again, is another cause of bewilderment amongst some acharyas. Why? But then they explain that to have this it's a novel, it's a philosophical odyssey of Gopa Kumar, who was a coward boy from Vrindavan, and he loved Krishna as a human being, and he got a guru, and he chanted a mantra, Gopal mantra, and he went all over the universe looking for Gopal, and he finally found him in Goloka Vrindavan, and then he came back to earth, and he realized there's no difference, because that's one of the teachings of the book. The teaching of the book is not that, oh yes, Sakiras is something good for Gaudiyas. That is not the teaching of the book. Teaching of the book is to show the highest form of Godhead is Krishna and Vrindavan. And there's no difference between Bhoma Vrindavan, Prakrita Leela, and Aprakrita. When Gopa Kumara was on this earth planet, it was 500 years ago when Sanatana Goswami was here. And this is called Aprakrita. It's invisible. We can't see Krishna's pastimes, although they're going on right in front of our eyes. If our eyes are spiritualized and full of praying, then we can see them. We can hear Krishna's flute with our ears right now, today, in this Vrindavan, if we have the purity of heart and the will, and Krishna wants us to hear it. Because when Krishna plays his flute 5,000 years ago in the same Vrindavan, his pastimes are prakat, visible and tangible and hearable. But even then, when he plays his flute, not everybody can hear it. Because he plays in such a way at night, everyone has ears. Jatila has ears, Abhimanyu has ears, Vrishabhanu, Nanda Maharaj, everyone, gopis, squirrels, cows, deers, everybody has ears. But when Krishna plays his flute at night, not everyone hears. Only those Madhurya Premi Bhaktis hear. And Madhurya Premi Bhaktis are his consorts, the damsels of Braj, Radharani, Lalita, Vishakha, Sakhi, etc. They hear the murli rolling through the air and entering their ears and dancing sweetly in their hearts with invitation. Krishna is inviting each of the gopis through the musical, loving musical notes of his flute. He's inviting each individual gopi, "Oh Radha, please come. Please come, be with me, please dance with me. It's a beautiful night, please join me on the banks of the Yamuna. I'm eagerly waiting for you and anticipating your arrival. Please don't wait, don't hesitate, please come quickly." And then he plays again and he calls Lalita, Vishakha, everyone. So even in this uppercut Vrindavan today, 500 years ago or even now, if we have that purity of bhava, of prema, we can also hear Krishna's flute. If we have that Madhurya Bhav, we'll hear late at night, we'll hear Krishna calling us. We'll hear Krishna's flute and someday we'll see Krishna. Many things happen in Vrindavan. It's a magical land full of surprises and mystery and full of Krishna's presence. So the jiva issue. I could probably answer that question. If I said yes, how would it benefit you? If I said no, how would it benefit you? Either way, it wouldn't benefit you. So, nice, cute question, but I don't think so. Otherwise, I should be, exhibiting all the symptoms of prema. But since I'm not, then the answer is no. Obviously, they can draw a conclusion by observing certain symptoms. The guy is lying there and all snot coming out of his nose and he has a fever. You say, "Excuse me, sir, do you have a cold?" What do you think? So the jiva, as far as everything I studied and even I've seen in Prabhupada's books, so that's what we're supposed to talk about because we ended up with Krishna's flute. Back to the jiva. As far as I know, everywhere it says, what to speak of, just open a Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 12. And it's Krishna says, "Na tveva ham jatu na sham na chwam name janadipa." He says, "Oh, Arjuna, do you know, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be." So that one verse, 2:12, proves there's no such thing as creation, yeah. And there's no such thing as death. Everything is eternal. And that Krishna says, "Arjuna, I can remember all of my births. Bahoni me vyavatitani," and it goes like this. But you can't, because you change your body and then you forget, whatever. But I'm God. I remember past, present, and future for eternal time. So there's no such thing as creation. There's no such thing as in the beginning.
No.
So our brain only functions in causality. Yeah. Causality. A plus B equals C.
Yeah.
There's a cause. If there is an effect, if there must be a cause. You have a cold. Why do you have a cold? There's a cause. The result is I'm sick. And I have certain symptoms of that. Fever, no appetite, sore throat, whatever. So now, what is the cause? Then the cause is, well, bacteria or virus or my husband's sick, I got sick. You can trace a cause. This is the world we live in. Cause and effect. But that's why it says the Karna Samudra. This side of the Karna Samudra is Maya Jagat. This is in the Bhagavatam. It's called causal ocean. Have you ever heard this term? Yes? It's called Karn. Karn means cause. Karn Samudra, the ocean of cause. You cross that ocean, then you go to Vaikuntha. There's no time, there's no space, there's no cause. There's no beginning. Nityam, Ananta. Nityam, Ananta. So jiva, everywhere it says, the jiva is in the material world from beginningless time. There's no beginning. We've been here. The jiva, the Buddha jiva in the material world has been here eternally, forever. If God is merciful, then we can get out and go to the spiritual world, and we don't come back again. Because how is it we're there, and you can leave there and come here? Because everywhere it says once you go there, you don't come back.
Yeah.
Where's the logic in that?
Yeah.
Gita 15:6, there's 4 or 5 verses in Gita that say when you go there, you don't come back. Chapter 4, verse 9, chapter 15, verse 6, 3 or 4 other ones. When you come to me, you don't come back. Janma karma chametavam evam yovati tatvata tyaktvate ambarama janma punarn vijina janmate. It's in 4:9. So you understand my transcendental activities and pastimes, Arjun. Then when you die, punar janma na vidite. Vidite means there will not be. There will not be punar, another birth. In 15:6, for one having gone to the spiritual world, he never returns. So this whole idea that we are in heaven and we fell down from heaven, that's a Christian idea. It's a Muslim idea. So some people to give some kind of broader compassionate view of the presentation would say that Prabhupada changed the philosophy to get people in the door. Half price sale, come, everything half price. So people come in the shop, oh, what's half price? And they're looking, oh, is this dress? No, those dresses aren't half price. They're full price. Oh, what is half price? Oh, these socks here. Socks? But this is summertime. Who wants socks on half sale, half price? Your sign said half price. Only the socks are on half price. They do like that. So once you get in the door, let me buy that dress. And then you buy it. So this is to get people on the door of bhakti. Prabhupada extended the philosophy, but that may be okay. I don't accept that so well, but that's one justification of altering or modifying or changing the siddhanta to expand. But that can have its negative effect because people may feel like, oh, I came in here and with all these impressions and understandings of tattva and philosophy, and after 10 years I find out that they've been distorted or changed or not quite clearly presented. So now I'm a little doubtful and I'm a little confused and I'm not really sure what the actual truth is, if that truth can even be defined clearly anyway. So when you start becoming curious to pursue and find the truth, then you look to the original scriptures, the Vedanta Sutra, the Bhagavatam, Gita, and you seriously study in the commentaries and the books of across the board recognized acharyas. So across the board means throughout the Gaudiya Sampradaya, which is vast, millions of people are involved, most everyone will accept that the six Goswamis' writings, Vishwanath Narottam, Baladevi Dibhushan, these are the judges. Like in America, they have something called Supreme Court. And Supreme Court is not one judge, it's like 8 or 9 judges. Okay. So some big case, big legal case, it's in the district court, then it goes to the circuit court. Then it goes to the state court. Then it goes to appeals. Now there's different levels. Then finally it goes to the Supreme Court. That's the last court, final judgment. So these 8 or 9 judges sit there and hear these big, big, big cases. So for us in Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and at some point you have to decide, well, all these acharyas are saying this, and this acharya is saying that. You have, as you grow in Krishna Bhakti, you develop your discrimination and knowledge and everything by Guru's grace. And so you may inquire. So how is it? The book is saying this, but all the acharyas and their writings are saying this. And then maybe someone will give you an explanation like I gave you, which I've heard over the years, that bend or change the philosophy to expand the preaching, and these type of terms are used. So that may be justified or not, every individual will have to decide and rate that. But someone who wants, what is the truth? He'll have to make a decision, because sometimes acharyas, they kind of modernize everything or they liberalize everything, or in their attempt to explain or expand, maybe they even change or present new ideas which aren't in the tradition or aren't in the traditional shastras by the recognized authorities. So therefore, what I say is, across the board, the Supreme Court, the final authority on all philosophical matters and all matters of bhakti, bhajan, for the Gaudiya Sampradaya, the Supreme Court and the judges, there's nine judges. There's nine Supreme Court judges. Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, and Das Goswami. Baladev Vidyabhushan, Vishnu Chakravarti, and Narottam Das Thakur. That's how many? Nine. There's nine judges on the Gaudiya Vaishnava Supreme Court. So someone says, well, my client is pleading that we were in the spiritual world and we got envious of Krishna. We thought, oh, you're dancing with so many girls and I had to just play the sitar, you know, all night long. And I'm so tired of playing the sitar. And I'm just watching all these pretty girls. I want some too. You know.
It's called the preacher.
So Krishna says, okay, you know, stop playing that sitar. Go down there and go to India and play sitar and get some name and fame and get a few girlfriends and have a good time. He says, oh, thank you, Krishna. He comes down and becomes a famous, you know, whatever. So that's, you know, that's how we got here. So now, okay, that's your pleading. So we take that case and we submit it to the Supreme Court. It approved. Everyone said, yes, this is correct. The city court approved it, the district court approved it, circuit court approved it, state court approved it. But the clients or defendants, whoever it is, get confused. The opposing party didn't agree with that point. They said, no, we're not happy with these decisions. We have to take this case to the Supreme Court. Oh, that's very costly. Anyway, go to the Supreme Court. And then you submit, Your Honor, excuse me, judges, nine judges, we have this particular point here. What? What is this point? Jiva, what do you say? Sanatan, what do you say? Rupa, what do you say? Baladev? Uh-oh. So they'll say, no, it's not like that. They wrote so many books, Krama Sandarbha, Paramatma Sandarbha, just to explain the nature that the jivas, which is, how will you ever understand it? Because the whole subject is so inconceivable. But the basic fundamental points is we've eternally been in this spirit and this material world, eternally. Because Prabhupada, you know, how to explain this point? Because we're eternally, we're bada, nitya. Nitya means eternal. Nitya bada, eternally conditioned in the material world. And we weren't sitting on a top of a mountain on a Tathasta region, wherever that is, not described by anyone but a few. And then we looked and we saw the glitter of the spiritual world. Oh, it looks very nice, Brahmajyoti. Then we saw the glitter of New York City and Moscow. And we said, oh, that's very nice. Well, that looks nicer. And then like a mustard seed on the top of a dagger, you know, a knife dagger, a little Sarso beach. It can fall this way or it can fall that way. It won't stay, it'll fall. So somehow we look from that to Tathasta region, then if we look to Brahmajyoti, then we go to the spiritual world. If we look the other way, we come here. That's nowhere in Goswami books. No, the Supreme Court never wrote about or heard such a thing. Never was there a time that I did not exist. There's so many verses. We're eternally in the material world. If we get the grace of devotees and the grace of God, then we can get liberated. That's what mukti means, liberated from this eternal imprisonment. And you can call it imprisonment, but it's not because we're being punished, it's just that's our position. Our eternal, it's not a matter of punishment. You are bad boys, now go to prison, because that analogy is also given. It's a prison in the sense that the shastras, Vedic shastras, call the material world Durga. Durga has been translated by some gurus to mean prison. So when we think of prison, we think, oh, the guy's a convict, he's a criminal, he murdered somebody, he ripped off somebody, he robbed somebody, cheated, whatever. So he's being punished by going to prison, by jail, prison, whatever you want to call it. So we were in the spiritual, we were bad boys and girls, and we got our wings clipped. They clipped our wings and kicked us out, and we came here. Now we're in prison, and for good prisoners, we can get parole, you know, get out. So that's, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I know. I've been pretty bad boy, you know, a bad girl. Yeah, I better be good. That's okay, but that's Christianity. And they're going to heaven. And we want to go to Goloka Vrindavan. Heaven's in the material world. We want to go to the spiritual world. And we've never been there. It's not covered, not forgotten. It didn't exist. Mm-hmm. It's like saying, oh, you have $1 million. It's just covered and forgotten. Where is it? Okay, let me work. You work hard, and you work for me, and then you'll find out that, you know, where it is. So then you work for 50 years. So where is it? You don't have any money. So this is, I mean, someone might be, when someone finds out some more clear conceptions or truths, he might feel someone indignant. He might feel, if you understand English enough, he might feel indignant, or that he's been cheated, or that he's been misled, or he might feel let down, or he might feel a little upset about some of the concepts and tenets, and philosophy that he's been taught and learned and read and studied for a large part of his life, even. That could be the response, kind of a negative or judgmental or angry response. But another response to that would be, somehow, whatever it was, whatever I learned, whatever I read, whatever I heard, it was arranged by Krishna. Because when I was little, when I was 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 or 12, I didn't know anything about Krishna or Guru. I knew about God. I was born and raised as a Christian. And even without, you know, being labeled anything or going to any institution or going to any church, I intuitively believed myself from my earliest life that there is a God, there is someone's created all this. Some amazing, brilliant person has created the flower. I grew up in the country, so there's so much beauty there, natural beauty. It's not some concrete jungle like New Delhi. But I grew up with thousands of varieties of flowers, each one a different color, each one a different fragrance, each one a different design, and different height and size and shape, and blooming at different time, and different kinds of birds. And we had so many little animals, and beavers and rabbits and squirrels and skunks and foxes and mountain lions and all kinds of things, you know, animals and beasts and fish and so much variety, millions, 8,400,000 species, 8.4 lakh yoni. So I just was marveling and amazed at the beauty of God, the intelligence of God, the variegatedness of God. I believed right from then. I didn't have any label. I believe in a Christian God. I believe in a Muslim God, a Hindu God. I didn't have any label. I didn't have any upadhi or designation. I just knew I was a little boy running around the fields and forests and woods of my homestead where I grew up in the country, in our area, our estate. And I believe in God. And I never changed. And okay, I had all this philosophy and all this sadhana and bhakti, very nice, but the basic underneath it all, I'm the same person I was from the time I'm born. I believe in God and I want to love that person. I was just always feeling so thankful and grateful to God that I realized that whatever I had was a gift. My body, because I would see the suffering of animals, dogs and cats and birds, you know, eaten by a cat, half eaten, and I saw suffering everywhere, and birth and death in the animal kingdom, and of course the human beings also. And I started to think, well, I'm glad I'm not a dog, or this poor rat, this poor animal lives out in the forest, freezing all winter, no food, hard life. God is so kind to me. He didn't make me an animal, he made me a human. And like this, I've been a Muni, a thoughtful person my whole life. So then that kind of person, he thinks, oh, I somehow I got a guru, a proper guru, but some fine points. Okay, you go on the road. It's a really good road, but there's a few holes in it here and there. So you get a few bumps. But you don't say, oh, that road's no good. I don't like that road. No, the road is okay, and there's a few bumps here and there that you don't like, but the road is very good. So along the same line of being grateful and grateful, and acknowledging the gifts of God, that whatever guru we receive or teachings that come our way, that a lot of it's more than anybody else ever got. 99% of the people on the planet are totally ignorant. They don't even know what is jiva, or whether jivas are always here, or came from there because of envy, or they're always here. They don't even have idea what is that. What to speak of trying to figure out which one is which. So anything we got, we're grateful for. We thank our gurus, we thank our teachers, we thank our God, we thank our Krishna, we thank our books. And if someone wants the truth, he's pursuing the truth as he sees it, as he understands it, because ultimately truth is subjective. Truth is how you see it, how you believe it. That's why that phrase is there, Atmana Manyate Jagat. The Atma, the person sees, he considers the Jagat, the universe, in terms of his own mentality. In modern vernacular, you say mindset. His mindset. Atmana Manyate Jagat. So you see it like this, I see it like that. That's why we have Mayavad, and we have Advaitins, and we have Ram Bhaktas and Vishnu Bhaktas and Buddhists. We have Brahmavadis. Some see God as Brahman. Some see God as localized Paramatma. Some see God as a supreme loving person. These are manyates, ways of thinking, ways of considering, ways of seeing. And they're all valid understandings of the tattva, the truth of God. Madanti tattva viras yat tajjnanam advayam brahmati paramatmati bhagavanti shabdite. And Srimad Bhagavat, in the first canto, there's a verse that says that Vedantis, they see God in three ways, and each one is perfect unto itself. If someone is a Brahmavadi, he's perfect. All glories to him. That's a perfect realization of God. God is Brahman, Parabrahman, or Brahman, Brahma Sayuja. And if someone else is yogi, jnani, meditating on Paramatma, desiring mystic cities, or just desiring to Shantaras and emerging in Paramatma, or like this, then he's also perfect in his conception of God, Godhead, and he's perfect in his belief and realization. And someone else, he's a Bhagavan. He worships the personality of God, Vishnu, Ram, Krishna, and he's also perfect. So the truth is there, and people will argue to the end of time because of their particular coloring of their mind and intelligence. You can only see reality according to what Krishna wants you to see. Okay. Some people are born in darkness and they live their whole lives in darkness. Some people are in partial darkness. Some people are in complete darkness. Some people are standing in some light. Some people are in the bright sunlight of midday sun. So the knowledge, that's why it says Krishna Sriya Samamayahai Andhakara. This is a verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna Sriya Maya Haya Andhakara. That Krishna is like the sun. So the sun has different intensities of light and heat and illumination power. When it's setting, it's very less, and when it's rising, it's very less. So the sun, the Krishna Sriya, the sunshine of Krishna Bhakti, the sun, there's so many levels of bhakti, as you well know, so many degrees of devotion. And the same way with transcendental knowledge. There are so many levels and degrees of transcendental knowledge. As one expands his bhakti and deepens his bhakti, then Krishna starts to bless him more and more and more. He becomes more realized and more perceptive. He becomes more perceptive, more discriminative, and more realized as he progresses in bhakti bhajan and receives more kripa from Krishna. Krishna is confirming this point in Gita, in 10th chapter, verse 10. Tesham sarata yuktanam bhajatam priti puravakam tadami buddhiyogam tam yena mam upayanti te. Mam upayanti. They come to me. Upayanti. Upayanti. They come up. They come to me. Up, over, around. They come to me. How do they come to me? Because I let them come to me. How does Krishna let his devotees come to them? How do you find where is Krishna? How do you know where to find him? How do you know how to come to him? Because you need intelligence. Like once the devotees were in L.A. on a walk with Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, we're distributing so many books. There's thousands of books being distributed at the airport. And everyone's taking up Krishna consciousness. And this is one particular devotee, actually. And they're selling like hotcakes, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada says, very good. So Prabhupada, it seems that very soon Krishna consciousness is going to take over the world. And Prabhupada laughed. He stopped. He's walking, tat, tat, tat. He stopped his cane. He said, no. And the voice, they all stumbled over each other in the morning walk. No, 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 Prabhupada. But there's thousands of BTGs and thousands of Gitas. No. Krishna consciousness is only for the intelligent. So very few people will come to Krishna consciousness, because especially in Kali Yuga, very few people have intelligence, or at least spiritual intelligence, to discriminate matter from spirit, maya from God, reality from illusion. What is night, it says in Gita, what is night for all beings is a time of awakening for the self-controlled. And what is night for the self-controlled is night for the introspective sage. So this is... It's ever expanding. Krishna ever expands. Our bhakti ever expands. So the Bhagavatam first canto says, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayochita Jnana Vairagya. It says that by bhakti, by developing love for Krishna, Krishna gives you things. When you develop love for Krishna, Vasudeva Bhakti, Krishna Bhakti, then Krishna gives knowledge, transcendental wisdom. You become a wise person. And he gives detachment. You become niskinchan, akinchan. You become free from the pushings of this indriya and senses. Vacho vegam, manasakrota vegam, jiva vegam, udarapashta vegam. Vega means pushings, urges, drives. The pushings of tongue and eyes and ears and hands. Become atmaram, muni, devotee. Krishna gives these gifts. These are the fruits of the tree of bhakti, detachment and wisdom. So everyone is on a different level, different plane of perception, different level of bhakti, different plane of perception, understanding. Krishna says in Gita, we should not upset the faith of others. Mm-hmm. So that has different meanings. Of course, you can see the commentaries of Baladeva Vishwanath and Sridhar Swami and others on Gita, which are in English, and get some clear understanding of this verse. Not disturb the faith of others, which I don't remember exactly where it is. It's in Gita. That's common sense. If someone has a good thing going on, why should bother them? You know?